We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of Dynasty Recast on RotoViz Radio, brought to you by our friends over at Underdog and the Blue Wire Network. Make sure to tune into the rest of the show to get a special promo code that gets 100% deposit match into your Underdog account when you started up with us, RotoViz, R-O-T-O-V-I-Z. Oh, wait, I shouldn't have done that. Dan.
Stays in the show.
Yeah, double the promo code. The promo code won't double, but I'm going to say it twice in this episode, apparently. But, Dan, a week 11, I think, is in the books. We're creeping towards. This is obviously a conversation we can have at other times, but I went to make a trade in the Kitchen Sink Leagues this morning, and I can't because it trade deadlines. So I know most people hate them. I actually am slightly in favor of them. I like them to be a little bit later, like once the playoffs start. But definitely slightly disappointing when you go to make a trade. It's like, oops, there's trade deadline.
Yeah, it's a big topic. I prefer not to have a trade deadline, but I do get and I understand it draws interest. It draws, you know, some extra attention from the league. So from that standpoint, I like it. It's also nice as someone who kind of is trying to always play in the contender role rather than rebuild. I like to always have the option of going and getting something if I need it. Whereas, you know, with that hard deadline, you kind of have to put your eggs in one basket all at once or just roll with what you've got. So I like the kind of open trading throughout, but I also get the deadline. It's different too, Nathan, because you and I, for the most part, play with people that we either know closely or buddies or that we've handpicked for specific leagues. So we know we can trust people, because that's when you can run into issues with people, you know, selling off a bunch of their stuff for nothing, you know, and not quite colluding, but also helping somebody win a championship for next to nothing. So I get it. I'm just happy to be able to still trade in some leagues and understandably not in others.
All right. So let's get into some injury / benching news to start the show. First, he's a recurring topic nearly every single week on this show. Kyle Pitts is heading to IR with a torn MCL or a heavily injured MCL requiring surgery. This closes the book on 2022 for Kyle Pitts. I was thinking this, so we'll go a couple of different ways for Kyle Pitts. Obviously, Kyle Pitts is a quote-unquote like bust for redraft in 2022. Maybe certainly a disappointment for Dynasty in 2022. But what kind of career does Kyle Pitts have that is considered a success? What kind of Kyle Pitts career does he have we consider a bust in Dynasty? Like, if he's not like a perennial top five tight end and redraft, you know, 2023 and beyond, that has to be a bust, right?
Yeah, I don't think we can call him one. I think the easy way to call somebody a bust is when they lose all of their dynasty value rapidly. And Kyle Pitts isn't doing that. He's still retaining most of his dynasty value. He's not a top five pick like he was 6 months ago. And not to toot my own horn or anything like that, but and injuries aside, I was saying from day one that Kyle Pitts is probably a second contract tight end. Atlanta was always going to be bad. This was always going to be a bad situation, even though people wanted to say, well, look at all the open targets and availability. It doesn't work like that when you're in a team like this. I get it. They should be bad and throwing a lot, but they're not bad enough to be throwing a lot. And also they have Marcus Mariota, who can't throw a lot or his limbs will fall off. So I'm still in the belief that Pitts is I hate to use the term, but generational talent, because he is very good. The issue is the volatility of his situation. I don't think Atlanta has any sort of consistency in its near future. I don't think Arthur Smith is good for an offensive weapon like that team is built right now to run, and they're winning enough games to not get a franchise quarterback of the future. Whether you think Des Ridder is that guy, I don't. That offense with Des Ridder is going to look much more like it does with Marcus Mariota than it would with, say, Patrick Mahomes. Very, very different things. I think how it's built now, that team is going to be kind of that RPO. They're going to be running a lot, whether it's Cordero Patterson or Tyler Allgeier, or they go and get another running back in what's, you know, should be a decent running back draft and or running back free agency. So I still think we wait to buy Pitts for his price to come down some, because he's still quite expensive, Nathan. If you've gone out and made any inquiries about Kyle Pitts, he's still pretty darn expensive, especially as a tight end when it's really Travis Kelce or bust right now. It was Travis Kelce, Mark Andrews or bust, and we've got a couple of fringe guys like Dallas Goedert and TJ Hockenson. Even Pat Freiermuth is kind of making some waves here. So, as far as Pitts goes, it's tough for me. I'm holding if I have him. I'm buying probably, I would say, early in the off season as I can. Once we get clearance of, you know, if he has surgery, successful surgery, great. We're happy there. And then we kind of wait for things to kind of die down, people to stop talking about him, and then we buy. I think as early in the offseason as you can, when your trades open back up, if you had a trade deadline, or post-championship for those that don't have a trade deadline, I think buying Kyle Pitts once kind of all of the news dies down will decrease his value a little bit.
I don't know. There is some impact with using points now, though. If the Kyle Pitts manager needs points now, for example, John Bosch, who is like the resident Kyle Pitts lover of all lovers, I saw come across the Twitter sphere this morning that he traded Kyle Pitts for Travis Kelce in a league. That is a perfect move for both sides, assuming one side is rebuilding, aka the one getting Pitts, and one side is trying to compete for a championship right now, and that's the Travis Kelce side. So, I mean, like I said, Pitts clearly has more dynasty value than Travis Kelce. But in this exact moment, when someone needs those points, it's a little bit different. So if you have a tight end that's scoring points, obviously, Andrews, you'd probably want, you know, Kyle Pitts plus a decent amount at this stage for Mark Andrews. But if you have a tight end that's scoring a lot of points, like even if you have Hockenson scoring a decent amount, or you're having Freiermuth and he's scoring a decent amount, you can use that to like make the gap between him and Pitts smaller. So you're only doing like Hockenson in a second for Pitts, or Hockenson in two thirds, or something like that. Like, if you're a believer in Pitts being a legitimate, you know, generational type talent, using one of those lower tight ends that are scoring points right now may be a correct move.
Well, and I think setting the expectation that Kyle Pitts for now, whether it was last year, because even last year was inconsistent. The targets may not have been inconsistent, but the output was inconsistent. This year, wildly inconsistent. That's probably not going to change until Atlanta has a complete, you know, makeover. And that doesn't necessarily have to mean that Arthur Smith is gone, but they're going to need a different offensive strategy. They're going to need a new quarterback. They're going to need to add weapons because I don't think Drake London's that guy. Calvin Ridley, obviously now gone. So this offense is kind of in no man's land. And now with Pitts on the IR, we're just going to see more of the same rather than, well, what are they going to do without Kyle Pitts? They're going to throw it 18 times and they're going to run it 30 times. That's the game that they play. So, yeah, I'm with you, though. If you can swap Pitts for Kelsey, I probably would have done that even without the injury, to be completely honest. I'm good with holding. I'm good with buying if you need the points, trying to sell off Pitts to get points. It's kind of one of those times where you can take advantage of his big value that he still is going to hold because of his name and the rookie year that he had in total. And you can also just hold, or you could potentially go and buy for a little bit of a discount, depending on what you're trying to do. You might be able to get into a Kyle Pitts share by using Dallas Goedert for nothing, or a straight up swap of Goedert or Hockenson or even Freiermuth, one of those decently young guys that is producing but doesn't have the upside that a Pitts has. I think those are great moves to make.
All right, let's move on to a sad topic for myself, probably a bit of a gleeful topic for the one devilish Dan Sanio. Zach Wilson had one of the worst quarterback outings in football history. Maybe not Zach Peterman or Josh Freeman-esque, but bad enough that his team was playing any other quarterback other than Zach Wilson, they would have won the football game. And that's Zach Wilson. So Robert Saleh has not even given the vote of confidence to Zach Wilson, saying he doesn't know who he's starting, Mike White, Joe Flacco, or Zach Wilson. My personal opinion on like that decision is there is no point in playing Mike White or Joe Flacco. Like, you're just going to destroy any confidence that Zach Wilson has, and you're not going to make the playoffs either way because that division is loaded. And no matter who's playing quarterback for that team, like, I think the Jets have a very talented team, but out of those three quarterbacks, none of them are leading that team over the Bills or Dolphins, and probably not the Patriots either. So my take is just run Wilson into the ground this year and completely show this guy is not the guy, so you can invest in a quarterback next year. But yeah, my take on, as a guy who's been buying Zach Wilson for, you know, the last year or so, as his value has cratered more and more, I'm probably not buying anymore. I'm probably done. Because I obviously draft capital, yada, 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 but he has just shown nothing. Like, with a decent, like, obviously the weapons have dwindled. Elijah Vera Tucker out for the year, Brees Hall out for the year. But, like, his good has been, like, okay, and his bad has been awful.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's probably one of the least surprising things as far as news goes. Like, I would have been significantly more surprised if it was, oh, Zach Wilson's good now. Like, that would have been surprising to me. I never really saw the upside in Zach Wilson as far as like a future potential franchise quarterback. I never got that. I never saw that in the film. I haven't seen that in the NFL. We've seen glimpses of decent throws here and there, but, and yes, having, I think, 2 out of 5 offensive linemen go down, losing Brees Hall, that's tough, but this Jets team has its best weapons it's had ever, probably. And Garrett Wilson and Elijah Moore and Corey Davis even. And he's not able to do anything with anyone at this stage. He's had one halfway decent game this year that he threw 3 picks in, but he also had 350 yards and 2 touchdowns. And that was against New England like 3 weeks ago, a month ago. That was really the one sign of potential light at the end of the tunnel was, well, maybe he's going to get some volume. And the volume hasn't been there, but also the inefficiency, the inconsistency, he's just been straight up bad. He's seeing ghosts. He's hearing footsteps. I don't think, to be honest, because we saw a lot of this last year, Nathan, I don't know that it's salvageable. I think the Jets have to make a decision on whether or not they think they can win now, because that team is talented enough to try to get one of those last couple, that last wild card spot. It's going to be tough. The AFC is an absolute bloodbath, but I think that they can win enough games to grab that last spot. But I don't think they can do it with Zach Wilson, because you can't roll Zach Wilson out and expect him to go win a game. And I don't think Joe Flacco is much better, but he's not going to lose you a game. Zach Wilson's going to lose you games every week, it seems. As good as that defense has played and as strong as they have been, they can only do so much. Holding New England to essentially no points because it was all special teams, I mean, what more can you ask of a defense? And again, New England's offense hasn't been great either, but defense wins championships, but quarterbacks lose them. So I've been out on Zach Wilson. I think that's been clear. Early on, wanted to give him hope when they added Garrett Wilson, when they've had Elijah Moore, and they add Breece Hall. I thought the weapons would help. The offensive line got better. But all of those things have started to go away. And we haven't really seen a big change in Zach Wilson's play. He's just been bad the whole time. So I think if you can get any sort of value out of him, I'm not opposed to selling now. But at this point, the value is probably low enough where it doesn't make sense to sell. Probably just hold, and you either bite the bullet or you get something on the other side.
I think if you're selling Zach Wilson right now, the move would be to pair Zach Wilson in a second and hope you can get a first. Because there's not really any sense in trading Zach Wilson for a second unless it's an early one. And so I'll take the bump up from like the 204 to the 107 if I can do that. I don't even know if he carries that much value anymore. But he does still have the first round top five draft capital. And he isn't benched yet. Like, I mean, maybe by the time you're hearing this, he's benched. I'm at the very least stopping my buying of Zach Wilson. Granted, it's not like people have been selling for any sort of like cheapness, and maybe they are now.
Well, they're not selling, Nathan, because you own all the shares of Zach Wilson.
I actually don't. I only have him like two or three leagues. I'll put it this way: if I can trade like 3/3 for Zach Wilson, I'm still gonna do it. Let's put it that
way. You heard it here first, folks. Send Nathan an offer of your Zach Wilson for his 11/3, and he will trade them. What about this? Would you trade Zach Wilson for, say, Aaron Rodgers or Matthew Stafford?
No, I don't want to start either of those guys either. Aaron Rodgers is done. Stafford is concussed. Like, maybe Stafford, if I'm like, thinking 2023 is my year, but like those guys, like I have no interest in rostering either of those guys right now.
See, I'm smash accepting again, because I'm almost never going to have a use for Zach Wilson as like we'll hold on and we'll see. I'd rather just have whatever points the other guys can provide, because even though they're both washed and trash and dead, they're scoring 10 times what Zach Wilson's scoring.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, that's where my like draft capital youth is going to come against me, where I'm not going to take the slight bump in points now. All right, let's go to Justin Fields, who has an injury that's either day-to-day or out for the season. I think that this may heavily be impacted by the fact that the Bears are not competing for a playoff spot in 2022 right now. So what are your thoughts here? Do you think they shelve him for the year? They let him sit a few weeks? What are your general consensus on what happens with Fields the rest of the year?
Well, considering how they've been using him over the last 6 weeks or so, I don't really think they have a choice. I think you have to shut him down. If you're going to put Justin Fields out there and expect him to run it 12 to 15 times and not continue to just re-injure that injury or get hurt more or hurt something else, I think this Chicago regime is in a much different place than it's been. I think they're going to be smart enough to shut Fields down until he's 100%, whether that's, the end of this year, which would not make any sense at all, or just 2023. You let him get fresh, you let him get healthy, and we continue what he's been doing, just absolutely going crazy on the league with his legs and being just good enough with his arm to keep, you know, the defenders at bay. So I think not only should they, I think they have to. And I think that's the smart move. You know, that offense isn't going to do any, you're not going to lose anybody to not playing Justin Fields. I mean, Darnell Mooney, sure. I still think he can be fine with whatever the backup quarterback is. The running backs, whether it's Herbert or it is Montgomery, then nothing's really going to change there. I think the red zone efficiency of the team obviously will be hindered quite a bit. But I don't think for long term it's really changing anything. Obviously, short term, that hurts fantasy upside quite a bit for pretty much everybody. But I'm as far as Justin Fields goes, I'm looking in the long view. I don't really care about right now, because we're seeing the steps moving forward of him being a great player, not necessarily a great quarterback, because he's probably a below average quarterback, quote unquote. But because of his rushing ability, he's a great player and he's an amazing playmaker. So let him get healthy. Let him make those plays in 2023.
Yeah, I'm certainly not counting on in my leagues that I have Justin Fields. I'm not counting on points from him in 2022 at this stage. I'll take anything as a bonus if he ends up coming back later in the season. But yeah, long term, I would probably just rather have him sit out for the year. Also, that gets him closer to like getting Jackson Smith and Jigba, or, you know, whoever wide receiver one is in the 23rd class. The worse the Bears are, the closer we are to getting that. And just imagine Justin Fields and Jackson Smith and Jigba together. Oh, wait, we've already done that. granted, it was for 1 year. But still, I think that the Bears have to lock in a wide receiver one in the first round. I don't think anyone is debating that. And Cole Kmet kind of came alive there towards the breakout of Justin Fields. So as we transition, as we look at Justin Fields and Cole Kmet, are those two guys that you might want to be looking at stacking in underdog if we're looking at best ball season next year?
I think that's a perfect kind of stack. It's been pretty apparent that Kmet has been one of Fields' favorite targets. Obviously, we found some success with Darnell Mooney as well. But these quarterback tight end stacks, when you can find that advantage, because tight end is so scarce and those points just aren't really available anywhere, when you can find them in a situation like that where you could run Justin Fields alone and be happy with all of his points, because they don't really have the weapons yet. But with Cole Kmet on that breakout, that's a perfect stack. And we love stacking our players on underdogfantasy.com, where best ball drafts are still happening in your three-man, your six-man. There's in-season stuff. You have all of the pick'em games. Off-season is the bread and butter, in my opinion, but these pick'em games are still very, very, very fun. And you can do all of this, again, at underdogfantasy.com. And if you use our code ROTOVIZ, that's ROTOVIZ, you're going to get a 100% bonus money match on your very first deposit. So up to $100, obviously. But if you put in $100 on your first deposit, Underdog's going to say, hey, you know what? I got you. Here's an extra C note. Here's $100 extra, and you don't have to wait for the money to hit your account. It's pretty much instant. It's no trickle down. No, well, you got to keep spending your money in order to get this. No. Your first deposit, you put in $100, they put in $100, you have $200 to play with, responsibly, of course. So again, go to underdogfantasy.com, type in ROTOVIZ, ROTOVIZ, for your promo code on your first deposit and get free up to $100.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. In hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
All right, let's get into a player that's quickly becoming one of the most polarizing players in all of fantasy football, and it is one Tony Pollard. I'll start this conversation off, Dan, I'm going to just say the lines for Pollard so far this year. 4 points, 19 points, 10 points, 1 point, 14 points, 7 points, 12 points. In the last 3 weeks, 33, 21, 36. Now, I know we had the bah humbug of him being tired after 10 touches. Hasn't seemed to be an issue the last 3 weeks. 14 carries, 15 total touches, 25 total touches, and 21 total touches for Tony Pollard, and he has been doing it with great efficiency. So, Tony Pollard, I know we talked about this. This was my take when we first started talking to Tony Pollard a few weeks ago. I was saying Tony Pollard is playing his way out of being affordable on the Dallas Cowboys because they don't have the money to spend on a second running back because of Zeke. There is zero chance the Cowboys can now afford Tony Pollard. Tony Pollard's going to be getting the Jerick McKinnon, the Lamar Miller type contract.
Well, I see. I'm not going to go that crazy. I don't think he's going to be getting like top running back money. I do think that he's going to be too expensive for Dallas to retain. And unfortunately for them, he's unrestricted. So he is, I would say, effectively no longer a Dallas Cowboy come week whatever, 18. But I also still think he's best suited as your, not necessarily a change of pace guy, but just he can lead a committee. I'm not doubting he couldn't lead a committee, but I think it's a 50-50 committee type guy. He would work really nicely with someone like, I don't know, Derrick Henry, who can smash between the tackles for 25 times and then let Pollard come in for another 10 and also throw him the ball 6 or 8 times. We've seen him make the big plays. We know he's special in space. We know all of those things. I still don't love the idea of smashing an undersized back into the line 20 times a game. We saw that once against Green Bay. It went okay, but I don't think that's sustainable for a full season. I would love to be proven wrong because he's really fun to watch, and he's been really good these last few weeks, this last month. Not to say he's been bad for his career, but it also seemed like Dallas kind of changed their scheme a bit to work towards Pollard rather than have Pollard run Zeke's plays. So that, to me, was a big change, and I think that's a big reason why he's looked probably better over the last month is Zeke goes out and they reframe their offense around Pollard. And they still have the Zeke plays for when Zeke plays. That worked out nicely. But now you have a whole new package where Pollard can do his own thing, get in space, run deep routes, run wheel routes, do all of these extra things that he wasn't necessarily doing before. So while I love this short term in Dallas, he's not going to be a Cowboy in 2023. I can essentially guarantee that. I would put a very, very large margin that he is not a Dallas Cowboy. Finding him a good home is going to be tough because most of the good homes are taken up by good running backs at this point. So we'll see. I don't hate the idea of buying, but the question becomes, what are we buying for?
Yeah, I think I'm officially willing to give a late first and a mid second type. Like I know Ryan McDowell, whenever there's these vast change in values, he always, you know, posts a bunch of comparison polls. And in most of those polls, like, he's comparing Pollard to like top like 9 to 12 running backs. And I'm not there yet. But the draft capital price tag was a mid first. And I think that has to be the absolute ceiling to pay for Tony Pollard is a mid first. And my mid first, I'm talking like 107, 108. There's no chance I'm giving 105 for Pollard right now. And I know that obviously that some of those things are still up in the air with draft picks being formed. But yeah, I think that I would say this. Now is the time to shop Pollard. Because obviously that might be self-explanatory because, you know, he's having a breakout, yada, yada. But what if he does go back to Dallas and he's still stuck behind sharing with Zeke? What if he, like, goes to, like, Minnesota and, like, shares with Dalvin Cook? Like, there's a very good chance that he is a 1A, 1B situation, in which case, when he signs, he's not going to be worth a mid-first anymore.
I don't think he's going to be going anywhere that has an established RB1. I don't think he'll be back in Dallas because of Zeke, unless they say, hey, we're done with Zeke, you're the guy, which, unless they Todd Gurley the man, I don't see that happening. I don't think a Minnesota is in the cards. I think they're going to be more of a drafting a young back, letting Madison go, obviously keeping Dalvin. I don't see a world where he, unless he's vastly overpaid, which could happen. There could be a world where he gets that bag and he goes to a bad situation. I think this is going to be one where he goes to whoever he thinks is going to give him the football best. Baltimore wouldn't be a horrible option. Who knows what that cap situation is going to look like? Who knows what J.K. Dobbins is going to be? He just seems like an injury at this point. Maybe Philadelphia. Are they done with Miles Sanders, even though he's looked pretty good this year? There's enough good offenses that could use Pollard, but I don't think there's any great offenses that are going to pay him. Because most of those, you know, you have your Jonathan Taylor, Saquon Barkley, Christian McCaffrey in San Francisco, Nick Chubb in Cleveland, again, Derrick Henry in Tennessee, but I think a Pollard type works really well with Derrick Henry. Minnesota with Dalvin Cook, Cincinnati with Joe Mixon. Kansas City, I think, could be, if they can find the money for him, where we could see Pollard absolutely explode. We saw somebody like Darrell Williams do really well, and Tony Pollard is Darrell Williams on steroids. So I think if we can get Pollard into Kansas City, we all cross our fingers and hope at this stage, if they can find the money to do it, or maybe he goes to a place like that because it's Kansas City, because it's Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid and that offense. Then you've got a potential RB1 overall in Tony Pollard rather than hoping just to get a top 12 running back in Tony Pollard. So I'm cautiously buying if I can get in for that late first. I don't think that gets it done, though. I think people are going to be pushing to have him priced in that DeAndre Swift, Nick Chubb, even Najee zone for you know, kind of in that group. So I think but before we move on, we'll finish with this, Nathan. Let's just, like, a couple of names. You tell me whether you'd rather have Tony Pollard or this person. Mm-hmm. Well, so we're going to start high. And I already know the answer to this one, but I want to see if I get any sort of thought coming out through your eyes. DeAndre Swift.
Swift.
Okay. That one was easy. Derrick Henry.
Henry.
Okay. Ramondre Stevenson.
Pollard.
Okay. Najee Harris.
Harris.
Javonte Williams.
Pollard.
Dalvin Cook.
Cook.
Josh Jacobs.
Jacobs.
All right, last one, Joe Mixon.
Mixon. All those guys, almost all those guys, I'm guaranteed to get RB1 touches in 2023. I think it's likely that Pollard gets RB1 touches, but I'll put it this way. He'll get NFL RB1 touches, but he's not going to get fantasy RB1 touches.
Yeah, no, I think I'm on board with that. I think there's a couple of outlier teams like Kansas City where he'll get both. I kind of went through and grabbed some of those guys aside from Swift. I grabbed Swift because infinity for Swift, even though I think Jamal Williams is going to be a thorn in his side for some years.
Jamal Williams is a free agent. We're going to talk about that in 8 seconds.
They're re-signing his ass.
All right. Let's do a quick Detroit corner. Jamal. Jameson Williams has returned to practice as of Monday. DeAndre Swift is battling red zone touches with Jamal Williams. Jamal Williams is a pain in my butt. they're both very good running backs. Swift is averaging like 6 yards a carry on the season. Jamal Williams has the most touchdowns in the NFL. So I am currently of the happy belief that Jamal Williams will be going elsewhere and DeAndre Swift will get full RB1 workload in 2023, but you're telling me that's wrong.
I don't think anyone has appreciated Jamal Williams until now. I mean, he's one of the best all-around running backs in the NFL. He blocks, whether it's run blocking or pass blocking. We've seen those guys on the field together. He can run between the tackles. He can catch the football. He's a red zone threat. He's wherever you need Jamal Williams, he's going to be. And unlike most quote-unquote star players, even though he's not quite in that star player category, has a big role on what's been a pretty good offense. Everyone around him loves that guy. Most of these types of players are people either like dislike or like, yeah, whatever, he's fine. Everyone Jamal Williams speaks to, goes around, is on a team with, absolutely loves the guy. So I think I'm going to go out and I'm going to make a bold statement here, Nathan. I don't know if Jamal Williams is going to be a Detroit Lion, but what I'm going to say is that Jamal Williams gets paid more than Tony Pollard this offseason.
That's interesting. I think that if that's the case, and it's something that we talk about a lot of the time when we talk about early breakouts and something like that, the NFL cares more about touchdowns than we do. So the NFL might look at Jamal Williams 13, 14, 15 touchdown season and be like, oh, that guy's like a true blue RB1, and see Pollard as like, okay, that guy's, you know, 1A, 1B. But I still would, like, if I were placing a wager, I would place a wager that Pollard gets slightly higher, but it's still running back pay. So it's going to be like Pollard gets paid like $6.1 million and Jamal Williams gets paid $6.2 million. Like, it's not like they're going to be breaking any team's bank either way.
Well, and here's the other wrench to throw in to the mix. DeAndre Swift is a free agent in 2024. Do they pay Jamal Williams now and let Swift walk? Because if you can get Jamal Williams for 5.5 up to 6.5, let's say that's the window for Jamal Williams, Swift is going to want 8, probably.
Yeah, no, Swift might get 10.
Right. So do you sign Jamal now and let Swift walk and still have that double-headed monster in 2023?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, the question there then becomes, like, how valuable do you think, you know, 31, 32-year-old Jamal Williams is?
Well, he's what, 26, 27 now? Pollard's going to be 26?
I thought Jamal was like 28. Hold on. He's 27. So, yeah, he'll be 28 in April. So, yeah, he'll be, you know, if they're paying for him, they're paying for his late 20s, early 30s.
Which, in Jamal Williams' case, because he really wasn't used heavily early on, is probably his prime. He's probably at the beginning of his prime right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. Give me a hot take for Jameson Williams.
I think he is a top 25 wide receiver by the end of the season.
What does that mean? Top 25 points or top
dynasty.
25 dynasty?
Okay. Dynasty value.
Yeah, I haven't looked at dynasty rankings recently to see where Jameson Williams is, but I do think that all of the first round wide receivers pretty much belong in that top 25. If I had to look at it, you know. So yeah, I think that my hot take for Jameson Williams would be that he is the most valuable not named Chris Olave at the end of the season. Obviously, that would require a decent breakout over these last few weeks, but we still have a few weeks left in the season. So I will say this. I think that Jameson Williams has the highest ceiling, not name Olave, the rest of the season.
Yeah, and I mean, there's a chance because of Detroit and because Goff, when he is playing well, that offense is fun, and when he's not, I mean, they're pretty abysmal, but that team is going to be contending. They're going to be throwing the ball. They need to throw the ball. They have no one to throw to outside of DeAndre Swift and Jamal Williams right now. Jameson Williams is walking into one of the best potential situations because Detroit's still trying to win. Dan Campbell hates losing. Whether that's good or bad for the organization, Dan Campbell does not like to lose. They are going to try to win every single football game at whatever detriment to the team it may be as far as draft futures go. They're committed to the Jared Goff bit at this point because they hate losing so much. So I think Jameson Williams could, let's say he plays the last 6 weeks or last six games for them. I think there's a decent chance he's a wide receiver one in those last six games.
All right, and let's wrap up the show with a trio of wide receivers all having some big games. Christian Watson has scored a bunch of touchdowns the last couple of weeks. Treylon Burks had his breakout as he's finally healthy and the Titans offense starting to get something put together. And also by something put together, I mean Tannehill's back healthy and Malik Willis is absolutely terrible. And George Pickens is doing kind of the things we were kind of expecting at the beginning of the season.
Yeah, Pickens for me was kind of that guy where it was either it was going to go really, really well or he was going to be James Washington. I think Pickens is just another guy on that Steelers tree of just amazing wide receiver talents that they are able to just go and get. And they got him for a steal. I mean, he was right there for me with Burks and you know, a lot of people loved London for, you know, the obvious, the prototypical wide receiver one build. And he had a nice late breakout as well. So I think realistically, it probably would have been, you know, Olave and then Garrett Wilson and then some combination of Burks, Pickens, and then Drake London. But Pickens for me is moving his way up the list rapidly. I think he's fringe wide receiver one or getting there. I think he's right there with Garrett Wilson and Chris Olave. And I think Burks being back and catching passes makes a huge leap as well. I think the last time we spoke was about Treylon Burks being last because, well, he has been on the field. And I think we, and obviously Jameson Williams is right there as well, but I think Treylon Burks moves his way back up in my rankings, even with just this short little bit. Him being on the field and catching passes is important. Ryan Tannehill sucks, we get that. But I think Burks has a clean line to wide receiver one type usage, and I think Jameson Williams, when he returns, will be on par with that. So the one that's weird for me is Christian Watson. I don't really have a take on Watson at this stage because Green Bay is a weird situation. It's hot and cold with the pass catchers. We never know what Aaron Rodgers is going to show up. And Watson's been great when he's being targeted, but that seems inconsistent as well.
Yeah, my take on Watson here is that he does seem like a forgotten injury guy that we probably should have been trying to buy a little early in the season. But I'm still iffy on his NFL prospects. Like, I don't think that this proves that he's any sort of like top 24 wide receiver or anything like that. Not necessarily that his price is there either, but like, I think that he kind of profiles as more of like a boom bust type play, and the Packers are leaning more toward bust than boom. So I would lean towards selling. Maybe this is kind of just confirming my own priors a little bit, but I would lean towards selling Christian Watson right now. If people are putting him along a similar value as Jahan Dotson and George Pickens, because I'd much rather have those two than Watson. And it doesn't seem like people are at that stage yet, but if we see a couple more, like, and the other part of it is that basically all of his production has been touchdowns, and we know that isn't sustainable. So yeah, if you can use Watson to get into one of these other, you know, lower valued, like, early wide receivers from this class, or even like a pick, like, you know, if you can get any first for Watson, smash accept right now. And yeah, so I think that the move is either using him to get a higher value 2022 wide receiver, or trading him for a pick at 23 and picking up one of the first wide receivers there.
Yeah, none of that's out of range for sure. Recency bias is a hell of a drug, and people that just look at box scores or even just look at the fantasy totals, I mean, they have no idea that he had four targets and three touchdowns. You know, that's part of the bit. So I think I think moving off of Watson isn't a bad move. I think if you believe that Rodgers is A, staying in Green Bay, and B, can bounce back and this offense can be better and more consistent, then fine. Hang on to Christian Watson, because there's a chance that we're going to be talking about Watson in a few weeks the same way we were talking about Chris Olave and Garrett Wilson a month ago. But I would guess, in my heart and my soul, I don't see him as that guy. I think he's probably more of an NFL wide receiver two type. But if you get on Rodgers' good side and he sticks around, that's historically been a pretty good place to be, as on Aaron Rodgers' good side.
Alrighty, that should wrap us up for today. We will talk to you guys next week. Have a nice turkey. If you're listening to this before Thursday, if you're not, hope you enjoyed your Thanksgiving leftovers. Any last words, Dan?
Move Brandon Ayuk up your dang rankings. He's too low, folks.
Oh, boy. Hot take to get out the building. Ayuk, all the Shanahan, the greatest weapons to ever be seen, according to Twitter. That's your wraps up for this week. We'll talk to you guys next week. Kadoosh!